Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you back on board for another week as we examine Western civilization and all that goes on about it. Well, and a little bit of Eastern civilization, maybe. We might get into some of that. Don't have a lot of news this week. Not a whole lot, because I've been in Las Vegas, which is a bit of a time vortex. It's really weird in Las Vegas. It's as if you enter an alternate, virtually real universe, but it's not quite real. So I had a couple of odd experiences out there on the road in Las Vegas. This is one of those Vegas experiences where one is confined to whatever hotel it is. I was out there at a trade show, looking for work as usual, and trying to find Rand Paul, who didn't show up. Rand Paul was scheduled to speak, but apparently he's busy doing other things. But that's okay. I had plenty of personhood paraphernalia that I left around the hotel. It was a lot of fun. But it's one of those things where you're pretty much confined to the hotel, no car. The hotels are so big that you can't walk anywhere unless, you know, you're in some kind of reasonable physical shape, and that rules me out. So I was pretty much confined to the hotel. So the very first afternoon, I went to the radio, sitting next to the bed, and I tried to tune in some AM stations to program them in. And much to my chagrin, the radio, clock radio there next to the bed, didn't appear to have a setting for AM radio. It had a place for you to plug in your iPod, and all of the hip-hop stations on FM were preset. The bass was turned all the way up, like on so many rental cars you get these days. But I thought, you know, I'm not familiar with this radio. I'm looking at it. Generally, I'm fairly good with dials and knobs and buttons, but I thought maybe there's something I'm missing. So I called down to the front desk. Hello, Mr. McBurney. How may we help you? I just wanted to ask if the radio in the room has an AM radio receiver. Excuse me, sir? AM radio, I'm wondering if there's AM radio on this clock radio here in my room. I'm not sure I understand, sir. Amplitude modulated radio. AM radio. Oh, your radio. We'll send someone up right away, sir. And I said, well, I don't need you to send somebody up, but they had already hung up. And so one of the concierges, I'm not sure how you say that, one of them actually came up to the room within 5 minutes. And this is a hotel where it takes 15 minutes to get anywhere from anywhere. And this guy was Johnny on the spot. Comes in the door, sticks out and glad hands me, hey, how are you doing, sir? We're going to get you taken care of. I'm sure the radio's just unplugged. I said, well, it's not unplugged. And I really didn't need you to come up. I was just asking if the radio had amplitude modulation capabilities. Does it pick up AM radio? Because I'm looking at it, I don't see a way for it to pick up any AM radio. It's as if it doesn't have that sideband. And the fella just looked at me, and he said, AM radio. You know, man, I don't think anybody ever asked me about that before. We looked at it for about 25 seconds, and we both determined together, we concluded that, indeed, the clock radio had no AM radio capabilities. And so there I was, trapped in a hotel room in Las Vegas with no AM radio. and no internet. Now, here's the deal with internet at these fancy, expensive Las Vegas hotels. Now, if you go to a Motel 6 in northeastern Oklahoma along the side of the road, and you just stop at any random Motel 6, they'll have free Wi-Fi. You go in, you set up, and you can listen to your amplitude-modulated hosts on their podcasts. But that's a Motel 6, $39.95 a night. When you're paying $200 a night for a hotel room, you have to pay for the internet. So the option was $30 for 3 days, and I checked my watch, and I said, well, if I turn it on now, it's going to turn off before I leave. So I'm going to have to sweat out this first night with no internet. And I managed to survive it, but it was not pretty. I can tell you that. Thankfully, I had some of my favorite pastor's MP3s already on the hard drive of my computer, so I had an opportunity to listen to that. And, of course, I did have television. Now, was that the night they capped the well? I can't remember, but I thought that was a big deal, that they capped the oil well leaking down there in the Gulf of Mexico. Did I have anything witty to say about that? Oh, no, I really didn't, but I wanted to point out a story I just came across as I was preparing for the show. This is a story from our good friends, the journalists at the Associated Press. And they're saying that the well has been capped, as you all know, for going on 4 days now, which is wonderful. I'm happy. You know, last week I started to sense that maybe the Lord was looking down and saying, look, I gave you an incredible ecosystem that's resilient, but you've got to plug the hole. You got to do something. So someone was listening, and they capped the hole. Well, now the AP says, listen to how they report this. This really annoys me. The AP says, today, an administration official familiar with the spill oversight told the Associated Press that a seep and possible methane were found near the busted well. The busted well? Excuse me? You call yourself a reporter? Is this another example of journalists trying to relate to the young and stupid? The busted oil well? First of all, busted wouldn't be the right term no matter what, because the well is capped, for one thing, and the well is not capable of being bankrupt, so it couldn't be busted in that sense. Anyway, I suppose I shouldn't. Maybe I'm nitpicking because I'm a man of letters, and I just wouldn't use the term the busted oil well, unless I was talking to a five-year-old. But maybe that's what you have to assume when you're writing stories for the Associated Press. I just don't know. So, nothing too witty to say about the capped well, except that we hope the cap holds, and we hope there is a way that all the oil under there can be extracted, because apparently there's a good bit of it under there. So, hopefully, we can figure out a way to get to it.
Now, what's AC
going to
talk about?
Where are they going to send Anderson Cooper if that cap holds? Well, he'll go back to Haiti. Him and Sean Penn go down there and hang out. All right, should we move on to the news of the day? Oh, one more thing about Las Vegas. Can someone explain this to me? Somebody explain this to me. They have 8 Chinese language radio stations on the Las Vegas Strip. I was at the fabulous Bellagio Hotel. I was encapsulated there, not unlike a mummy in a tomb, in a pyramid out there for 4 nights. 8 Chinese language stations. What's the deal with that? And I'll just say this. You could take it for what it's worth. As I'm exiting the front of the hotel one evening to go to find, I'm trying to find dinner for under $75. And for that, you have to escape the confines of the hotel. Okay, so despite my lack of physical conditioning, I decided I was going to take the walk down to the Fat Burger. So I get out to the front of the hotel, and there's a Chinese woman, appears to be in her mid-30s, holding a little flag, wearing a novelty T-shirt that obviously she's associated with a group, bright yellow shirt with bright red Chinese lettering. What do they call it? lettering. They don't call it lettering. Kanji. Chinese pictographs. And she's holding and waving a little flag, and she turns around, and behind her are 20 or 30 school-aged Chinese kids. I would say 7th grade. Junior high school, middle school age. They're taking a field trip to Las Vegas. I mean, that's just, I don't know. I suppose they want to expose the young Chinese children to capitalism, but I'm not sure. Well, I wouldn't take my kids to Las Vegas. I'll tell you what, just getting from the Bellagio to the Fatburger, which is 2.5 blocks, well, you have to run a gauntlet of just filth. And even in the hotel, I mean, there are just, you can't bring a teenage or a, well, you can't bring anyone with any morals whatsoever, frankly, to Las Vegas. What's that now?
Not to Las Vegas.
Not to Las Vegas. But I saw a lot of parents with their teenage boys and girls walking up and down.
They're buddies.
I guess they're good buddies, yeah. But let's go to Las Vegas and party! Wow! I don't get it. Anyway. All right. So we did the 8 Chinese channels. Still don't know what. Oh, there's a new hotel that is very creepy, by the way. It's just, let's see, get my bearings here. Just south of the Bellagio there on the Strip, there's a new hotel. I forget what it's called. Something Orient Express or something like that. Anyway, it's not lit up. It's all dark. It's perfectly square. And it's called the Shanghai Tower or something like that. And if you blink, you miss it. You don't even know it's there. It's as if the Chinese have built a stealth hotel right there on the Strip. It's kind of eerie. Can't remember the name of it. I should have done my research before I did the show, but I just got off the plane. I think my head is still compressed, frankly. Got off the plane, took the kids to the swimming pool. So I went from high and pressurized to down below the water. And anyway, I'm a little dizzy, so you got to hang with me. All right. And what's the deal with people taking pictures in Vegas? You know, I will admit that when you walk through some of the hotels and see some of the sights in Las Vegas, that it's breathtaking. A breathtaking visual. But then if you whip out your phone or your little 10-megapixel camera and then you snap a photo of it, it's just, I'm sorry. You're wasting time. You're just never going to capture. I mean, what's the point?
Guilty.
And I mean... Well, no, I only took those pictures to send back to Nicole so she would know where I was.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm talking about people that I followed who would stop every 15 to 20 steps and go, ooh, and then take pictures of things that simply cannot be translated onto digital or film. It just can't happen. Not with a $49 camera from Walmart. But anyway, let's see here. Should we move on to the news of the day? I suppose we probably should. Although I must tell you, I wasn't that interested this week. Let's see if we have anything of any import to bring you. And I'm doing the show today because I know you need me. It's not that I wanted to do it, believe me. It's that I know you need me. And I know that you need to be informed about such things as this. Dateline Las Cruces, New Mexico, from our good friends, the journalists. At the Associated Press, a 47-year-old New Mexico man whose pants and prosthetic leg were set on fire by his friends after he lost a drinking bet has been released, thankfully, from a Texas burn center. Now, investigators have opened a criminal case to determine if this fellow's friends should be charged with a crime, even though the man agreed to be lit on fire. A man of his word. Sheriff deputies found the man naked beside U.S. Route 70 with his prosthetic leg in flames. On July 5th, investigators suspect that the men may have been drinking.
No.
It's a possibility. It's just one of many leads that they're tracking down in that case there in Las Cruces, New Mexico. All right, and now I had a wonderful conversation with an atheist, an associate of mine, I got in the last word, by the way. But listen to this. Speaking of atheists, a leading atheist has conducted a mass debaptism of fellow non-believers, symbolically drying up the offending waters that were sprinkled on their foreheads as young children with an unholy blow dryer. That's right. This is from ABC News. Edwin Kagan of the American Atheist, not to be confused with, what's Kagan's name, her first name? The Supreme, not to be confused with Kagan of the Supreme Court. What's her name? Max? Jeff? John? No, Elena. Not to be confused with Elena Kagan. Savage calls her Kagan the Pagan. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So if I steal that from him, I will try to credit him, at least for a while, but then I may adopt it as my own. Kagan. Anyway, back to the story. Edwin Kagan of the American Atheist, they had their big American Atheist convention, and he had his blow dryer, he had a blow dryer labeled Reason and Truth, big label slapped on it, and he was blow drying the foreheads of previously baptized, recently converted atheists. Said one woman, who traveled from Cincinnati to undergo the debaptism, she said, "I was baptized Catholic. I don't remember any of it at all." The woman says, quote, "According to my mother, I screamed like a banshee. So you can see that even as a young child, I didn't want to be baptized. It's not fair. I was born an atheist, and they were forcing me to become Catholic." Unquote. how old? That was a 20-something, 24-year-old woman from Cincinnati. So she says she didn't remember her baptism. But apparently she remembers that she was born an atheist. That's kind of interesting. Anyway, it's a funny visual with the blow dryer on the forehead. You've got to hand it to the atheists. Some of them are pretty darn witty. Let's see here. Edwin Kagan is the national legal director for American Atheists and has reportedly called out parents who subject their children to strict fundamentalist religious education, referring to that as child abuse, indeed. Yeah, he says, quote, "The fundamentalists are practicing child abuse in teaching that the world operates in ways other than it does. And in my opinion, they're engaged in terrorism by weakening our nation and our understanding of science and things with which we can defend ourselves and progress. If it had not been for these fools," that's us, the fundies, "we could have been at the stars 2,000 years ago." Okay. Well, there's just so much going on. Do I even want to address this fellow seriously? Teaching children that the world operates in ways other than it does? I'll bet you this guy is a homo-loving, gay marriage-advocating freak. How much you want to bet? I'll bet you he's pro-choice as well. Indeed. And obviously he believes in evolution. Let's see. Anything else from Mr. Kagan? Kagan says religion should not be used to determine how people ought to live their lives. Yes. Certainly not. Not religion. That's never worked. I am Doug McBurney. Now let that guitar play for just a minute. Welcome back. All right. We better get back to it. I tell you, I don't know if I can go through with this. I just don't know if I can finish this. I will make my best effort, but I'll tell you what. I got water in one of my ears, and like I'm shaking it, and it just won't come out. That's annoying. Anyway, my three-year-old today in the pool, she finally grasped the concept of getting her feet off the bottom of the pool, going horizontal and floating. So technically, she swims, I think. I don't know if you can call it swimming unless they can keep their head above water. Anyway, she floats and she doggy paddles. She floats and she's able to maneuver herself in various directions. Kind of like a zeppelin, you know? But I know a lot of people say, hey, at 6 months, just chuck them in the water. They'll swim naturally. But I just never had the nerve for that with my daughters. Now, if I had a son, I might do that if my wife wasn't looking. That's something I would try with a son, but not with a girl. I'm a little bit of a wimp as far as that goes. All right, now, we were just talking about the atheists. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons I think that so many people adhere to atheism, if that's possible, to adhere to a negative. Well, let's just assume it is for the sake of argument. The reason there are so many adherents to atheism is because most Christians are so pathetically shallow and stupid, especially regarding the scriptures and the nature of God. God bless them. I love them. They're wonderful, fine people. But they're generally an embarrassment. And that's probably not the best way to introduce this tragic, awful, horrible story that I'm about to tell you. But hey, it's been done. Let's just move on. Dateline Coppell, Texas. This is a North Dallas suburb. The mayor of Coppell, Texas, has killed herself and her daughter last week. They left a note saying that the two were still grieving over the 2008 death of their husband and father from cancer. In one of the notes found, the mother said, "My sweet, sweet daughter Corrine has grown completely inconsolable. She has learned to hide her feelings from her friends, but the two of us were lost. We were alone and afraid. Corrine just kept asking, 'Why won't God let me die?'" Why won't God let me die? Now, these are ostensibly Christian folks that any atheist... Now, it's horrible that they that the mother chose to kill herself and her daughter. And in reading the story, I'm not sure. There were some financial problems, obviously. But anyway, why won't God let me die? Why would a Christian person say that at a time of grief? A family member dies, stricken by cancer. It's horrible. It's painful. They die. What do the Christians do first? They blame God. At least the atheists don't blame God when things go bad. But that's one of the first things Christians always do, and it's fairly embarrassing. Let me finish out the story so you understand what happened here. Police arrived at the home of the mother and daughter after the mayor failed to show up for a city meeting. They found an envelope taped to the door. It had a house key in it, a typed note. So it was a well-planned suicide. The note said, "Please forgive me," signed by the mother. So there's another embarrassing Christian habit, forgiving everyone and asking for forgiveness without repentance. We do that a lot. That's embarrassing. There was a service. They wanted no... The mother requested no funeral. "Just please cremate us," she said in one of the notes. Pretty bizarre. But there was a service at the church that these two attended. The Reverend Dennis Wilkinson put on a small service at the First United Methodist Church there in Coppell, Texas. And the Reverend said, "Jane was a deeply troubled and finally a desperate soul." United Methodist. Say no more. It's probably easier to get through to an atheist than someone whose mind has been corrupted and altered in a United Methodist Church. Just sad. Just sad. All right, let's go into the justice file. And I'd like to start with some good news. Is there any good news in the justice file? Let me bear with me one moment here. Well, this is about as good as it gets. Dateline Cincinnati, Ohio. State Highway Patrol troopers approached 44-year-old Gary Sawyer last Tuesday in Lucasville, Ohio. His brother, this fellow's brother, William Gardner, who killed five children in 1992 by setting fire to an apartment, was about to be executed, and the troopers approached the murderer's brother as he was coming to witness the execution. He was waiting outside prison for word of his brother's execution when the troopers nabbed him. Turns out, he's been listed as a sexual predator since 2005 for a kidnap and rape conviction. And apparently some of his paperwork was out of order. And so he's been arrested. So here we have a murderer executed, albeit 18 years late. But we've got a murderer executed and a sex offender arrested on the same night. That's as good as it gets in the justice file this week. Well, hopefully we can read a story about Gary, the brother, being executed sometime soon. That's right, kidnapping and rape is a death penalty offense. It is. I'm not saying it should be. I'm saying it is. Now, legally in our country right now, it may not be the sentence that's being handed out by our judicial officials. But believe you me, it's a death penalty offense. And that will all be made clear either when I take over or in the end, in the big picture, on Judgment Day. All right, so there's the best news we could find in the justice file. Let's move on into the domestic tranquility file. From Oakland, California. This is Oakland, California. Police say an off-duty officer saw a man, later identified as John Taylor, shake an 18-month-old baby girl and throw her into oncoming traffic on Fifth Avenue, Oakland, California, last Saturday. A Volkswagen Jetta almost hit the toddler. The car's undercarriage burned and scraped the girl. But the baby survived. The baby's okay. The baby girl's mother now, she doesn't believe any of this. She doesn't believe that the boy's father threw the child into oncoming traffic. She doesn't believe the story. She says John Taylor, was under attack and did what he could to protect their baby. Now, I read through this whole article, and the only thing I can figure out is that the cops were closing in on John Taylor. And it looks to me like he threw the baby into traffic to distract the cops, because as soon as he threw the baby, he ran. At which point, I wish he would have been shot in the back or the front or both. But he was captured. Actually, he was captured by police. They had to pull him from the clutches of an angry mob that was in the process of beating him to death in the streets of Oakland. Other people who saw him throw the baby. But the police unfortunately rescued him from that situation, and now he will. Now he'll be processed through the justice system and become whatever kind of sausage it is we produce over there. All right. Now let's move on into the culture file. Buffalo, New York. Now I was born in Buffalo, New York, but I got out of there as fast as I could. Well, actually, my mother and father left Buffalo not long after my birth. I was born at Mercy Hospital in Buffalo, New York. I'm glad I never had to live there, because the stories my dad tells about public high school, like there's Catholic school, then public school, and then vocational school, which was for the, let's just say the kids that didn't take to your typical educational structure. And the stories he used to tell about these schools, I mean, it was like Lord of the Flies. I mean, I'm glad I never lived in South Buffalo schools growing up, and he tells stories from the 50s and early 60s. I can't imagine what it's like there now. I imagine everybody speaks Arabic there now. I haven't been back there in a while. But anyway, Buffalo. From CBS, armed security guards have been posted at public pools in Buffalo, New York. Yeah, a lifeguard was pulled into the water by some rowdy teenagers, scared for her life, literally rescued. And so now, 8 public outdoor pools, they were shut down a couple of weeks ago after there was fights and vandalism and just random violence. Well, not random violence, just violence and madness and mayhem being carried out by the young people who we've taught that they evolved from slime and that there is no absolute right and wrong and that you should follow your heart. Those kids that our culture has raised and educated in the government school system that we all pay for, those kids are out of control in Buffalo, if you can believe that. And so now security guards are on duty, armed security guards, and they'll be working at the pools for the rest of the summer. You know, I'm a big supporter of firearms. I have some. I enjoy them. But I think it's a shame that I, as a free man in the greatest country on earth, feel the need to carry a weapon. I think it's horrible. I think it speaks a lot. It speaks volumes to the state of justice and domestic tranquility in the nation. I mean, that I feel like I have to go armed. I'm paranoid whenever I have my kids out. You know, I'm always waiting for that black sedan to screech up and yank one of them. I know, maybe I'm paranoid. And now we've got armed security guards in Buffalo. For crying out loud. It's just sad, that's all. Oh, I love this. Get this. This is how conceited journalists are from New York. You know, everyone from New York thinks that New York is the center of the universe. So at the end of this story, the journalists there at CBS and the AP, who worked jointly on this story, at the end of the story, the New York journalists tag it, Buffalo is about 356 miles northwest of New York City. You know, I think after you get over about 100 miles, you may want to think of another landmark. Like, how about, you know, Buffalo is 15 miles. How about Buffalo is 15 miles south of Niagara Falls? You ever heard of that? Anyway, it's a New York state of mind, I guess, huh? All right. Now, I can't even remember the story I just did. I really should probably just turn this off and just try again tomorrow. But now, you know what? I've passed the point of no return. The Rubicon has been crossed. We're going to finish out the show, whether you like it or not. And I can tell you right now, I don't like it. But I am going to do my duty because I know you need me. Okay, armed guards at the pools in Buffalo. Let's go from Buffalo to Helena, Montana, which is approximately 2,047 miles west of New York City. Helena, Montana, from the AP. A proposed sex education program there in the Montana school system that teaches fifth graders, I can't really say that on the air. This sex education program, it also teaches first graders about, well, I can't say that on the air. Folks, you're going to have to use your imagination because I can't. Anyway, this has infuriated parents. Infuriated? No, that's not right. It's infuriated. I should just start over. Just turn it off. I said infuriated. Anyway, we're going to soldier on. This new sex education program in the Montana government schools has infuriated parents and apparently has forced the school board to take another look at the issue of sex education for first graders and fifth graders and high school kids, even. The proposed 62-page document covers a broad health and nutrition education program, and it's been in the works for 2 years. The geniuses behind the government schools in Montana have been working on the new curriculum for 2 years, but it's just the one small portion dealing with sexual education that has drawn the ire of many in the community. So this is classic, the way liberals corrupt the government and just any institution in which they get their grubby little hooks into it. They submit a document too long for anyone with a normal life to actually sit down and read it, and then they slip stuff in there that's evil and perverted. Okay, but if you don't realize that this is the way things work, and you're sending your kids to the government schools anyway, which we all know is run by liberals and fags and freaks and creeps and molesters and deviants and drug addicts and drug dealers and child predators. Have I missed any aspect of the government schools? I believe I covered them all. If you don't know all that already and you're sending your kids to the public schools, well, you may not be qualified to have children. Well, I suppose you're qualified to have children, but you should really seek some assistance in rearing them. Anyway, parents there in Montana, back to the story, parents in Montana appeared most worried about pieces of the plan that teaches first graders about... it teaches fifth graders another thing that I can't mention. And high school students, well, I can't even say that. It would also teach kindergartners anatomical terms such as... I can't say any of those on the air. Anyway, one resident said parents may have to consider impeachment of board members or a lawsuit. Well, how about this, resident, parent? How about raising your kids instead of turning them over to these deviant freaks every day? Let's see. Yeah, so they may impeach the board members. One such board member, a trustee there at the school, said he thinks much in the new school policy is very, very favorable. His issue with the plan revolves on whether certain components are being taught too young. Oh, is that what you think? I suppose this particular trustee, well, do we have a quote from him? He says, this is a trustee there on the state board, school board there in Montana. He says, quote, "I don't know that anything needs to be taken out. Some of it might be age inappropriate. We're going to have to consider how we teach it and when we teach it. Dad, send your boy to me. I will educate him. I will make sure he learns everything he needs to know, Dad. And Mom, don't worry. We won't teach it to your daughter until she's at least 16. Walking the line between love. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and I'm back. I'm not sure how this is going. It all seems very disconnected to me, but hopefully it's just me. Hopefully you're enjoying it to some degree. Probably a lesser degree than normal, but hey, I'm only human. Give me a break. So the Lockerbie bomber was apparently sprung in some kind of oil deal with BP. Isn't that bizarre? At the time it happened, I was very suspicious about why are they letting this convicted terrorist murderer out What's up with the Scottish? And I assumed that it's because they had just lost all touch with morality, God, justice, everything, post-Christian Europe, that whole package. But no, it turns out they were making a deal to drill some wells. There was a lot of money involved. And one thing that we know, as citizens of the West in general, is that money trumps justice almost every time there's enough money involved. And that we are always willing to make a deal even after innocent blood has been shed. It's just sad. I wonder if that's better. I wonder if that's a better motivation than the idea that the Scottish had simply lost all sense of morality. I'll have to ponder that. You know, my head's a little fuzzy today. I'm not able to process these complex, higher order thinking processes. So which is worse? They cut the deal for money and handed over the terrorist, hoping he would die in 3 months, or that they simply just don't know right and wrong anymore? Well, my gut says taking the money is not quite as bad as actually believing that you were doing a good thing. But I'm sure they're both capital offenses anyway. That's weird. Now, if I was superstitious, I would say, see, they let that bomber go and God is punishing BP. And everyone else associated with them down there in the Gulf. I would say that if I was superstitious, and then an atheist would laugh, and he would pull out a blow dryer and ask me if he could help me. Anyway, let's move on. Okay, as if that weren't irritating enough, the Lockerbie bomber being sprung for oil money. Roman Polanski is a free man today. Yeah. Widmar Schlumpf said a decision had been taken there in Zurich, Switzerland, following Washington, D.C.'s refusal to give Swedish officials... Did I say Swedish? Man, I tell you what. Zurich. Now, I did go to public school, but if I think that's Switzerland... I think I just said it was Switzerland, and then I switched to Sweden. I could be in Norway or Denmark by the time the story is over. But then again, so could Roman Polanski, because he's a free man today. Now, Widmar Schlumpf is a bureaucrat in Switzerland. And she says that Washington refused to give the officials access to confidential documents. And so she says, in these circumstances, it was not possible to exclude that Roman Polanski had already served the sentence to which he was condemned at the time. So we had to let him go. That's Widmar Schlumpf. Yeah. They had a news conference there, and Ms. Schlumpf was apparently the spokesperson. She added that Switzerland had not acted under pressure, and her decision was not linked to political issues in any way. And it was certainly not linked to a deal with the U.S. over the USB bank in its tax dispute. And in no way was it even remotely connected to an agreement to grant asylum to two inmates from Guantanamo prison earlier this year. None of that. Absolutely not. The Swiss, for their part, admit freely that this wasn't for money, that they have simply lost any connection to anything good, moral, or just in their post-Christian, hedonistic, circling the drain vortex of evil. That their culture there in Switzerland. It's not for the money. It's because they just don't know right from wrong anymore. Let's see. What does Roman Polanski have to say? He says, for the moment, I'm happy to be free and able to do the things I was kept from doing in that awful chalet that they kept me in for so many months. he said, now listen to this. This is the important part of the story. Roman Polanski said his son cut off the electronic bracelet that Swiss authorities had required Roman to wear while he was under house arrest. Roman says his son, quote, couldn't stand the bracelet anymore, so he was given the privilege of cutting the device off of Roman Polanski's ankle. And apparently the son cut off the tracking device with relish. So Roman Polanski raising up a child in his own image. A rebel. One who rebels against just authority. And one who feels he can get away with capital crimes. It'll be interesting to see how Roman Polanski's son turns out. Mark this, flag the tape. Here we are, circa July 2010. And here at the Worldview, we're predicting a bold prediction that Roman Polanski's son ends up to be a real dirtbag, at the very least. And possibly much worse. What an annoying story. That kind of stuff drives me crazy. All right. From Washington, D.C., the government here in the United States of America, shockingly, has a new study out that finds a 400% increase in the abuse of prescription pain medication here in America. Yeah. According to the report, this new addiction, this surge, I suppose you could call it, in prescription medication abuse spans every gender, race, ethnicity, education, and employment level in all regions of the country. The study was released Thursday by the director of the White House Office of Drug Control Policy to the relief of Barry Ho and the entire Obama administration and the Democratic National Committee and the RNC as well, whose chances in November will be directly tied to this trend line. Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, as we round third, and we are headed for home. Do I want to do more news, or do I want to... Well, let's go back to Las Vegas for just a few moments. Now, if any of you have ever worked a trade show, well, there's those moments in between breaks. Now, this was a surgery-oriented... affair. And so at certain points, the doctors are all in their sessions. And, well, you just hope nobody gets sick out on the trade show floor because you could never find a doctor. There's nobody. Place is empty. Oh, just sales reps. Overdressed sales reps, 95% of whom are hungover. And they're just trying to fill the 2.5 hours till the doctors come back. That 2.5 hours can quite often feel like days in the desert. So the subject came up. Several of us were passing the time. And the subject came up, where's the neatest place you've ever been? Because salespeople like to talk about things like this because it's a way we can try to impress each other with the amounts of money we've made, which is how so many salesmen measure their success. And, you know, it's a fairly accurate measure, don't get me wrong, to a certain level. But anyway, the topic comes up, and after a couple of recitations of far-flung and very impressive and expensive destinations, and of course the obligatory story of one drunken moron, what would you call him? just a perpetual adolescent of his greatest conquest. You know, you always get that. That's the fellow who hasn't made a whole lot of money, but so he goes to the conquest. But anyways, if you've ever been in this type of situation, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you've already turned the show off. And so that topic came up. And after three or four renditions of various things, I was on. And I said, I'll tell you. I said, in 1999, I went to Jerusalem. And so right then, the mood changed. Okay, it went from perpetually adolescent to let's try to impress each other to, I honestly felt a sense of, okay, this is actually meaningful. And I said, I went to a little garden outside the old city wall. And as the preacher walked us through the gate, he opened up the Gospels. And he started reading from the Scriptures. And he talked about the garden. He talked about the wine press. He read about the cistern in the hill. He read about the top of the hill called Golgotha. He talked about the place of the skull. And as you walked along the path, each one of those Scriptures was right there in front of you. You could literally reach out and touch it. You could see it. And when we got to the tomb, and the preacher read from the Scripture, there was some half dozen or so descriptions of the tomb where Jesus Christ was laid that you could literally look at in this tomb. Very specific, detailed descriptions that match this tomb perfectly. And we were allowed to go into the tomb, and as we sat in that tomb, you could literally feel the sensation of the entire history of all humanity consummating in that place at that one point in history. That was the neatest place I've ever been. So anyway, it was tough to follow that with the story of how you took your wife to Cancun or whatever. But anyway, just doing my part to try to educate the unwashed masses out there. Let's see here. Back to the news. Do we have time for any more news? Is this show ever going to end? My goodness. Felons voting illegally may have put Al Franken over the top in Minnesota. Can you believe that? An 18-month study conducted by Minnesota Majority, which is a conservative watchdog group, says that at least 341 convicted felons voted in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Franken won by 312 votes. And you can bet that the felons in Minneapolis, they're generally voting for Al Franken. Not necessarily Democrats, but just a guy they recognize from TV, you know. Dan McGrath, who's the executive director of Minnesota's Majority, the conservative watchdog group. So they'll be immediately discredited because they're conservatives. They'll be discredited by the liberal mainstream culture. What did Mr. McGrath have to say? He says, we're just trying to make sure the integrity of the next election isn't compromised. Dan, how naive are you? The integrity of the next election. God. Dan, somebody pump Dan some sunshine. I think he's been in a cave. Anyway, good luck with the integrity of the next election, Dan. Glad to see that you're out there. Glad to know that you're alive. If you can't say something, let's move on to Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, Argentina. Argentina has legalized homosexual marriage. They did it last Thursday, and they're the first in Latin America. Yeah. The vote, 33 in favor, 27 against in Argentina's Senate, happened shortly after 4 a.m. What's the deal with the heathens passing their immoral laws? They always seem to do it in the middle of the night. Have you noticed that? It's so funny how, I don't know if it's the Psalms or the Proverbs who talks about how evil, wicked people like darkness and that a righteous man walks in the light. Somebody send me that scripture annotation. But I know it's in the Bible. So I'll just recommend the whole book to you. Trust me, you'll find it in there. And all these, you know, the health care bill was passed at 1 o'clock in the morning or something. Here, Argentina, they legalize, well, I can't talk about what they just legalized because, you know, it's disgusting. But anyway, they do it at 4 a.m. Here in Colorado, in 1967, Colorado was the first state to legalize the killing of a certain class of citizen here in the state of Colorado. If your father was a criminal, you could be killed legally here in Colorado. And also, if you were simply unwanted or inconvenient to your mother and whatever man sired you, you could also be killed. We were the first state to do that here in Colorado. We legalized the murder of a certain class of citizen, and that bill was passed in the middle of the night back in April 1967. Let's see, back to Argentina. Marriage between a man and a woman. Oh, here we go. So the conservatives who want to come out and express why we should not legalize homosexual marriage, here's what a conservative senator, Juan Perez Alsina, he gave a passionate speech, they say, against gay marriage. His two big points: marriage between a man and a woman has existed for centuries. That's point number one. Number two, it's essential for the perpetuation of the species. Now, neither one of those are incorrect, but they're not the main reason that you shouldn't legalize homosexual marriage. The main reason you should not legalize homosexual marriage is because God says homosexuality is an abomination that leads to death, and that homosexuality should be a capital crime. That's the number one reason. Not only should you not legalize homosexual marriage, you shouldn't legalize homosexuality, period. It should be a crime. But in Argentina now, they have, because the conservatives are in this pathetic state, they've legalized homosexual marriages. Let's see here. The law broadly declares the following: marriage provides for the same requisites and effects independent of whether the contracting parties are of the same or of a different sex. And later on this month, we will be working on a bill to also modify the law of gravity. Because, you know, obesity is becoming a problem in Argentina. And we feel like that if we pass a law to modify the law of gravity, heavier people will not actually have to lose all that weight. They will feel so much better. So we're going to pass a law later on in the legislative session to do just that. Opponents of the legislation, they believe it's out of step with the views of the country. That's the opponents, again. And that's why the fags will win in Argentina, just like they're winning everywhere, because no one's willing to stand up and say, it's a crime. And then you don't have to defend it or try to, you don't have to try to talk about what rights should we give them or what rights should we not give them. Where do we draw the line? Should we let them be in Boy Scout camp? Should they be allowed to join the priesthood? How about it's a crime? And the day argument's over, and the deviants have nothing else to say. All right, I'm not going to do that story. I am so glad. Is that the music? Oh, man. I am so glad. The Turkish activist organization that organized the flotilla of so-called aid ships bound for Gaza back in May, they say they will continue efforts to bring supplies to Gaza, not only by sea, but by land convoys. We will head for Gaza. We will head for our brothers in Gaza by sea and by land. You remember back in May, when the Israelis killed all those terrorists? You remember that? Well, so these activists, when pressed by reporters as to when exactly they're going to send these new flotillas and these land assaults, Muslim agitators said, "More flotillas will head to Gaza in the coming months. And additional convoys by land. This together with many more surprises that we will reveal. We will reveal them to you very soon." And the reporter said, "Okay, well, when are you going to do it?" "Well, you know, the Zionist public relations are very powerful. And we must act accordingly." So they won't say when because, folks, pagan fanatics are best restrained by a credible threat of force and the occasional effective use of that force. And the Jews have done that. And so that's why I say bomb Iran now. Don't be afraid of these people. You break their jaw, and it doesn't make them madder, and it doesn't make them stronger. They cower like women. Did I say cower like women? I'm sorry. That may have sounded sexist. But let's just move on, because, you know, I'm not all there today. You can't hold me responsible for that. Okay, from the United Nations, a U.S.-based organization... Can I even do this story? Can I even finish this show? This is pathetic. Oh, here we go. The Obama administration and 14 members of the U.S. Congress are urging the Uneconomic and Unsocial Council to accredit the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission so that that commission can work at the United Nations and, you know, be a funnel for cash, hookers, cocaine, and now Filipino boys to everyone there who works at the UN, along with as many social worker loser parasites as can be confirmed to the club there and hired in the patronage jobs. The council is known as EcoSuck, and it's currently holding its high-level meeting at UN headquarters. That's right, EcoSuck. Jessica Stern, the EcoSuck Commission's program director, said the group expects to be voted in as a UN designated deviant-approved group on Monday. Jessica says, given more than 70 countries around the world that still have sodomy laws in effect and that homophobia is rampant around the world, the opportunity to be recognized by the international community and the human rights standard that the UN represents is invaluable to our work. What is the work of EcoSuck? Well, it has to do with your sons and your daughters and mine if they can get their hooks on them. Massachusetts Senator Barney Frank, who is a homosexual, urged EcoSoc to support the fag organization at the UN. He says, "Diversity of civil society in the United Nations is essential to respecting, protecting, and promoting the human rights of all people, to achieving sustainable peace and human security. Please do not allow the voices of marginalized people to be silenced by discrimination and procedural roadblocks." Unquote. So that's the worldview. That was Barney Frank. I'll be back with you next week.